Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session. Steve and I are together in the Cleveland studio. We are right at the end of the defense resting in the, well, that was technically yesterday. So in the Derek Chauvin trial, the defense is rested. He did not take the stand, which was probably the most obvious legal no-brainer ever, because what the fuck are they going to say other than, you know, we saw what you did, so explain yourself.
Yeah, there was, I mean, there was no chance he was going to get on the stand. I mean, like you said, there's just nothing that he... There was nothing that he was going to be able to say that was going to be able to help him, right?
Right. Plus, when he took the fifth, he kind of came off sounding kind of like a dick. I mean, I'm overanalyzing it, but he does kind of have a very smug thing to him. So it's not like he's going to get up there and appeal to people by likability. They saw the video. It's over. We should probably predict what's going to happen because by the time this gets published, we won't know. But by the time next week comes around, we probably will.
Yeah, I mean, I think he likely gets convicted on, I think he gets convicted on the manslaughter charge. I didn't hear the jury instructions, so I'm not sure what they, and that really matters, right? Because if the jury is doing their job and listening to the jury instructions, what they're told is in that moment is pretty critical. And so I think the manslaughter charge is one that you can get, that second degree, or I'm sorry, the third degree murder in Minnesota, I don't believe fits this scenario all that well. And the second degree is going to be tough. But I think the manslaughter definitely fits. Now, and the reason, the tough part about it is you have to prove that Derek Chauvin intended to essentially assault George Floyd, right? And the issue there is, you know, even though what he's doing isn't necessarily standard procedure for the police, is it assault, right? And now the reason why I ask that is because he's a police officer. It's a different standard right. than between me and you, right? Like if I throw you on the ground and put my knee in your back, right, for whatever reason, just as two civilians, then yes, that's assault and battery,
right?
But because he's a police officer, it's a stretch to say that he was assaulting George Floyd at that point in time, right? If he believes in his heart of hearts or in his mind that, you know, what he's doing is, you know, justified and legal and police work and the, you know, maybe not that particular thing is the standard procedure, but it's all in line with what they're trying to do, which was to, you know, arrest him. Now, whether they should have been there, whether they should have arrested him over all of this, right? Like, I mean, do we even know if the $20 bill was fake after all of this? And it doesn't really matter, but all of that is separate. And it really comes down to, you know, in that moment. And I just think it's going to be hard to make that connection legally that, you know, he intended to cause, you know, a certain level of harm and it went too far and George Floyd ended up dying. Therefore, you know, you go with that felony murder-esque type charge. That's just going to be a hard reach. Now, look, we all saw the tape. We heard some really compelling testimony on behalf of the state. The defense did not do a good job. You know, as they presented their case, they got just tripped up and crossed over multiple times. You know, their witnesses, I mean, at some point, you know, there were a couple instances where it's almost like if I were the defense, I would want to say this is a hostile witness, but you put yourself in this position by trying to kind of, you know, craft this narrative that just, there were so many ways to shoot holes through it, and the prosecution was up to the challenge, and they did. So, I mean, I think he ends up getting, I think he's going to get convicted. I think it's going to be of the lesser charges. It wouldn't surprise me if they came down with with you know, a heavier charge as well, but I think that might be a little bit of a stretch.
I'm predicting that they'll be hung on both murder charges, but will convict of manslaughter. I don't see how you could not convict of manslaughter. I mean, again, only takes one. I know, you know, Saturday Night Live did a bit about that with, like, you know, two black and two white television reporters. And they're like, well, this is a slam dunk, right? And the black reporter was like, eh, not really. You know, we've seen this before, so...
Yeah, I usually don't take my legal analysis for Saturday Night Live.
Well, I think maybe you should.
Right. I'm just gonna not. I don't necessarily think that you end up hung. I think you can get there on one of the murder charges, right? Like you might be kind of fudging it a little bit. I think you can get a group there based off the testimony, right?
Right.
Just sitting back objectively. You know, you're a pulmonary expert, some of the other scientists that they had come in and explaining kind of what was going on. We know the level of drugs that were in his system while they were there. It wasn't going to be the thing that killed him, right?
Right.
Like, he wasn't going to die that night, you know, because of the drugs that were in his system at that point in time. So the defense doesn't have that to rest on, you know. Now, you know, you can try to make a stretch. Well, maybe, you know, who
sure.
knows? Maybe he does. Maybe things go south, and because he had a weak heart, eventually he was going to die, right? But either way, that's not standard, right?
Right. And multiple doctors got up there and said he did not die from drug.
Right. It wasn't the drugs that killed him. You know, it wasn't the carbon monoxide from the car
right.
that they were next to. And all, I mean, it just, the defense just did a... I get what they were trying to do. It was, you know...
Muddy the waters.
Yeah, muddy the waters, throw all the spaghetti up on the wall, see what sticks. But they just didn't have a good plan on how to execute. And then some of their witnesses just got completely crossed up in expert fashion and ended up having to basically renege on what they had said. And, well, you know, once they were under the scrutiny of cross-examination, you know, there was one witness in particular that, the one who said that he, you know, could have died from carbon monoxide, and prosecution just gets up there and says, okay, well, now that we're going to, you know, let's talk real world, let's talk actual science, and based off the science, based off of what we know and these factors, is that possible? Well, no. Okay. All right. You know, I mean, look,
I didn't see that part of the testimony.
Yeah, I mean, and that's that is devastating to a defense attorney, right? Like, when you put a witness up there and you grandstand and you just look what he says. See, this is the thing.
Right.
Everybody,
right.
Jury, pay attention. Right. The prosecution just gets up there, maybe with a piece of paper in their hand, and they're just like, boom, 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 and they destroy the entire thing. And then the witness confirms the fact that they can't, you know, stand by what they previously just said. Completely devastating. And having been on that side, watching one of your witnesses getting picked apart by the prosecution, it's a devastating feeling, which it's very easy for your client to pick up on the fact that, oh, shit, we're taking, you know, we're getting our ass kicked in this particular round.
Right. I object, Your Honor. On what grounds? I really don't like what's happening right now.
Right. None of this is
working
going
out
my
the way. Right.
So can we just stop it?
So no. We got to talk about Duante Wright, who was shot and killed in, was it Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, right outside of Minneapolis?
Yep, about 10 miles away.
And I saw the video. If you haven't, the officer that shoots him, the female officer, yells, taser, 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 and then shoots him with her firearm, realizes she has shot him with a gun. He drives off, crashes, and dies. I'm not excusing the officer. I think the officer fucked up big time. But to put Derek Chauvin and her in the same category to me is just wrong. She was incompetent. The result is a dead person. I get that.
I don't see
any malice on her part.
All right, so part of the problem is, one, it happened very... Like, Derek Chauvin's trial is happening 10 miles away.
Right, right.
All
right,
so you can't ignore it, and she's a cop. And
yep.
You got a black body dead.
Mm-hmm.
Right? A black person dead, you know, at the hands of a police officer. So, it, you know, are they the same situation? No, but you still have a certain level, you're still dealing with incompetence, right?
Incompetence and possibly criminal incompetence.
Right. I mean, so there's enough there to make a connection. We're not saying that they're the same person, but, you know, there's, listen, you got, you got to work with what you got.
Sure.
You
know, sure. I'm sure
she's a real nice lady.
I don't know if she is or not.
I don't think that she intended to shoot him with a gun and kill him.
I agree.
Right? I firmly believe that she thought she had her taser.
I agree right? with that.
We talked to people with a lot of experience in police work, and the overwhelm, one of the big things that I took away from a lot of those previous conversations was the lack of training that these officers receive right. and the lack that they do. She's been on the, you know, this woman's been on the force for 25 years.
Yep.
Right? And I think it'll be interesting to see what her training, like what her actual log training looks like.
Sure.
I'm sure whatever the minimum is, she's probably there, right? And I'd be willing to guess that she probably didn't do much training on her own, right? And that matters. Listen, I'm not a cop. I'm not in the military. But I go to the range pretty regularly, you know, probably, I would say, a minimum 2 times a month, if not once a week. Now, why? Why do I do that? Well, I own firearms, and I think it's important that I know what the fuck I'm doing with them, right? So I work with professionals, I work with experts, I work with people who know what the fuck they're doing. I put myself in situations, real-life situations, not just sitting there shooting at a paper target, but actual situations where you have to move, you have to see things that may not be there, things that pop up, things that happen very quickly, because that's as close as you're going to be able to get to a high pressure situation in which you may have to use a firearm. It's important. Again, I own them for personal safety.
Right.
So I want to be proficient and efficient at them. It's not my job. It's her fucking job. It's her career. She chose to do this for 25 fucking years. So part of that is knowing what to do in these type of situations. And the only way you're going to know what to do in these type of situations is if you train them on a consistent basis. And I'm sorry, but hold on. If you do that, the chances are greatly reduced that when you're in that situation, you grab your taser instead of your gun and you put a hole in someone with a fucking nine millimeter.
You know, there's a big difference between you and them. Multiple differences. You pay money to do that. They would be getting paid to do that. Or they should be. Getting, you know, doing training. So it's part of their job. They should be paid to do their job well. Whereas you are actually putting out your personal time and your personal money. Have you ever done like one of those pop-up combat courses? I have not. I would love to do one of those.
Whether it's good guys
and bad guys, you shoot the wrong person.
And it's eye-opening, right? Because the first time you do it, you're not efficient at it. I don't care who you are, right? Unless you're just some sort of, you know, personal defense savant, which maybe there is. I don't know. You know, Rain Man John Wick, I guess. But It is surprising because it's amazing what your mind does in these sort of situations. You know, if it's, you know, loud and, you know, bad lighting, you know, a lot of like the training houses that the SWAT team that I work with, like, it's poorly lit. It's not open. It's very closed off. There are, you know, these kill funnels that put you in no possible way for you to get out of them, right, successfully, other than to not go in them. And that's kind of the whole point, is don't put yourself in this particular situation. What it does is it opens your eyes to what those split second decisions look like and how they feel. Now, the more you do them, right, the more comfortable you get.
Sure.
Things slow down for you, things quiet down for you, and you're able to perform, right? I mean, it's nothing, it's no different than you know, a professional athlete practicing, you know, one-handed catches over and over and over again, right? Like right. Old school people say, oh, you catch the ball with two hands. Well, guess what? There are certain situations where I need to make a big fucking play, and I need to be able to come down with the ball with one hand. So you know what? I'm going to practice doing that.
Right.
Right? And the guys that are really good, they can do it anytime, any day. Why? Because they fucking practice it. Right, so the really good police officers who train on a consistent basis, they probably don't have issues where they accidentally shoot someone with their firearm when they meant to use their taser. Because they train to use that firearm. They train to say, all right, here's a situation. It's bad. Do you need a taser? Do you need a gun? You figure out which one you're going to do, and then you execute. And she didn't do that, right? Like, you can hear her screaming taser, yep. Right? Now, here's the deal. Her taser was on her left side. Her firearm was on the right, right? We know that based off the examination.
I know they were supposed to be. I didn't know that they confirmed it.
Right. They confirmed it. Right? Like, so her firearm is on the right, which she's right-handed. The taser is on the left. She's right. Left-handed. They both face the rear, which means she pulled her gun out, right, with her right hand and extended it out, right? So that taser is bright yellow, right? I mean, and yeah, we know that it is. Right? Like, so there were enough things, there were enough cues that if you're drilling this and practicing this, then something should have went off, right? Like a bell, a whistle, a red flag should have popped up that something was different, right? And you had backup. There were other police officers around you where you had the ability to adjust and then pull out the right tool to use in this situation. Right. Now, it's real life. It's all happening really fast. And again, you have a person who's relatively untrained, right? Like, you can't argue. I mean, you can argue with me that she's really well trained. She's 25 years police officer. Again, well, that long, it's hard to, based off the end result, it's hard for me to believe you, but okay, right? But she makes this mistake and
the kid died.
And the kid died, right? And the argument everyone is making is, well, it's his fault because he didn't comply. He should have never tried to get back in the car. That is right. You are absolutely right. True. He should not have done that, right? And this death is partly on him because, you know what? He shouldn't have done it. But if you dig deeper, right, you dig deeper into the situation, into what got us here, right, pulling them over for expired tags. People say, oh, people get pulled over for expired tags all the time. I agree. But in Minnesota, specifically where they were backed up on getting people their tags, right, because of COVID.
Right.
Right, they were backed up for months, right? So why are the police even pulling people over for this? There should be a moratorium on it for until 2022, right?
Well,
can we at least think that maybe that's, I'm not saying it has to be, but maybe that's something that we could have done here, right? And then there's also the fact that he had a warrant. What was the warrant for? Misdemeanor weed, right?
He assaulted an 80-year-old woman, and I'm like, okay, that's awful. Now,
that's not what the warrant was for. Like, that's
I don't know if that's true at all. I don't know if there's a warrant. So that was going on.
I know that there was a warrant. The warrant was for misdemeanor weed.
Okay.
All right. Him attacking an 80-year-old woman. That's
a different. I think it might be completely bullshit, is my point. It got around on the internet. I don't know if it's true or not.
Okay.
But next thing you know, everywhere you look, he attacked. So the warrant was supposedly from 2019. So that punches another hole in our legal system. Like, why the fuck is this still an issue? Why did it take this long to resolve? Why is it? Because I guess the warrant was because he didn't show up for a Zoom meeting, appearance for that warrant.
Yes.
So that's why he was in trouble. Now, again, if it's for beating up an 80-year-old woman, it shouldn't take 2 fucking years for that to work its way through the legal system. Right. If it's for misdemeanor weed, well, you know where I stand on weed now. So,
As do half the states in the country, if not more.
43% of the population lives in a place with legal weed. I'm completely incompetent. I also don't want to excuse the officer that was cuffing him who lost him. That was also terrible training. They had him out of the car with his hands behind his back, and then get the fuck out.
I'm not going to Monday morning quarterback that particular aspect. Look, shit happens all the time. Like, yeah, you're right. It's not
bad training, isn't it?
You're not wrong, but look, the kid, I mean, he's little, he's wiry, he's slippery. He's, for whatever reason, he sees a situation where, sorry, I had a little glitch there. I had to step away. But, so coming back, we've got this situation where the police officer is trying to cuff him. The kid makes this decision, and you're right that the police officer's better training, whatever. But in the moment, right, this kid saw something that he saw that he had a chance, right? So the kid took it, right? The kid made the decision to put himself in the situation, right? And the cop wasn't prepared for it. Should he have been? Should they got the kid further away from the door? Should they have closed the door? Should they have been doing this on the back of the car so that there's less of a chance for that particular thing to happen? Sure.
Probably.
Right? Like, all those things are at play. But then, you know, it goes back to, you know, ultimately what got us here, right? What got us here... I have a lot of issues with the stop. I have a lot of issues with the warrant. I have a lot of issues with them arresting him for these things, right? They're mealy mouse bullshit things that people get pulled over for and arrested for. They get their records beat up all the time, right? And that goes back to the over-policing in these particular areas, right? Does this same sort of situation, if everything is the same, right? If it's in a predominantly white neighborhood and it's a white kid driving the car, right? Does he get pulled over, or do they say, "Hey, kid, your tags are expired, but we know that things are backed up, so you go on your way," right? But is it because they see a black kid in a car, in a nice car, in this neighborhood that they decide, well, one, we're gonna run your we ran your plates. Oh, look, they're expired. Oh, look, you got something hanging from your. Oh, look, you got a warrant. All right, get out of the car. We're gonna arrest you. Right? It's that, you know, over policing of these particular areas, enforcing enforcing the laws that, yes, these are the laws of the land, but you're not enforcing them fairly. You're not enforcing them equally across the board for everybody in every sort of situation, right? Like, so if you're going to drill this particular group, then go drill that group over here. We talk about it all the time. You know, there's one set of rules for people in Cleveland. There's another set of rules for the people in Bay Village, right?
Sure.
You know, like those are the issues. Like when you look at it just on the surface, the kid shouldn't have resisted, and the officer who shot him should have been better trained, and she should have been better prepared for this situation.
And by the way, is there, even if, let's say she did withdraw her taser, isn't there probably a bad idea to tase someone who's in a vehicle that's about to start moving? Like, if you're successful in that situation, you now have tased someone who's behind a wheel. It's split-second stuff. It's happening so fast. The reason I don't want to say I'm defending her. I'm just not putting her in the Chauvin category, because Chauvin had several minutes where he was not in any way in danger to stop what happened from happening.
Right.
She was acting very quickly in a stressful situation. Right.
They're not...
I've seen too many people equating the two. Not you, but I've seen so many people saying...
I think, but I mean, if you want to go back to, you know, looking at how police operate, looking at their procedures, looking at their training, it all works. They're not the same, but it's in that same pool, right? Like those, like in the Chauvin case, you know, if everything's happening the way it's supposed to, you know, you can make an argument. One, they don't arrest him at all. They don't deal with it, but okay, right. Fine. They feel that they have to, and he's a bigger guy, and he was, you know, out of sorts, sure, because of the drugs. Okay. But the other officers there, then, you know, if the training is better, they say, hey, look, all right, let's get him up. Let's get him in a better position. Let's get him in a, like, there's a lot of different things that you could do, right, other than what they did, which was they did nothing, and then, you know, Chauvin knelt on this guy until he died, right? Sure. And they tried to make every excuse for it. Oh, well, this crowd was preventing us from paying attention to him because they were so angry and yelling at us because, you know, they were talking about him dying or whatever. And that was like, you know, had us worried for our lives. So we had to, you know, I mean, it's the whole situation is a train wreck with Chauvin. She's not in that boat of, you know, causing it, right, of malice. But look, I mean, she's still, again, it goes back to, you know, training in that situation for, again, all the police involved, like you said. The cop that lets the kid get out of the situation, which I don't think it's fair to necessarily Monday morning quarterback that, but you should have had him in a situation where he couldn't do that, right? Get him out of the car, get the car door closed, get, you know what I mean? Like, get him to the back of the car at least, you know, be able to subdue someone, right? Like, I mean, police say, oh, it's hard. You don't know. You've never been in a situation. I've never been a cop. You're right.
Absolutely.
But I tell you what, I've been in my share of fucking fights with people who are trying to fucking physically hurt me. Right? Like, so I've taken it upon myself to be able to subdue other human beings, right? You are getting paid for it. I got paid $10 an hour to do it at some sketchy fucking bar, right? But I can subdue other human beings. And it's not just because I'm bigger, it's because I know what the fuck I'm doing. And as a cop, you need to be able to do that. And if you can't, get your punk ass behind a fucking desk. It's not that fucking hard.
You know, to your point about you're not a cop, I'm not a cop. But I can Monday morning quarterback some things. I can Monday morning quarterbacks. I've never been an NFL quarterback. I've never played quarterback beyond intramurals. But I can watch a quarterback make a terrible decision, throwing across his body, throw a pick six, and go, that was a bad decision. Just because I can't physically do that doesn't mean I can't look at that and go, you fucked up.
Right.
And she fucked up. I'm good. She's facing manslaughter charges. I think that's appropriate. She's resigned. Good. I don't want you being a police officer anymore, miss. I just don't think right. You, for whatever reason, you don't get to do that anymore. And that's not, I'm not trying to be, you know, one mistake shouldn't cost someone their career. Well, sometimes it should.
Yeah, people die at your hand, sometimes it costs you your job and more.
If I right? were to release a batch of a pharmaceutical product carelessly that caused people's deaths, I would be disbarred by the FDA. Mm-hmm. And I fucking should be.
Right. And look, there's an argument to say that when a police officer kills someone, justified or not, that may need to be the end of their career, right? Not necessarily that they don't get paid and that they don't get their retirement, but I can make an argument that once, as a police officer, once you take someone's life, once you take a civilian's life, justified, especially, obviously unjustified.
Right.
Right. But if it's justified, maybe getting you off the streets is a good idea. Moving forward.
Just for your mental health?
Yeah, for your mental health, because, look, killing someone, I don't care who you are. I don't care how tough you think you are. I don't care, like, oh, I've been to war, blah, blah, blah. Listen, it fucks with you, yeah. Right? Hurting other human beings.
And if it doesn't, that's worse.
Right. Hurting other human beings fucks with you. It fucks with your head. And if it doesn't, that doesn't make you special. This isn't a fucking movie. That's also a problem, right? Like, so maybe it's a good idea once these guys get to that point, these guys and these women get to that point where they have to take someone's life, then maybe we need to figure out something else for them to do on the police force or in the public sector besides be on the street where it can happen again.
I see your point. I'm not totally agreeing, but I'm not totally disagreeing. I'd have to think that through more. But
what's there to think?
Because if someone's defending their own life and they take someone's life and they still want to be on the street because
you can you can still. I'm not saying you can't be a cop anymore. What I'm saying is you maybe don't get to be on the street with a gun. Sorry.
All right. Well, again, we could debate that for hours, and I could probably debate either side. And we would have thought that the Duante Wright story would be the worst story of the week, but it's not. Young kid named Adam Toledo in Chicago.
I think it's Toledo.
Toledo, sorry.
It's because whatever. Anyway,
was shot and killed by a police officer following a chase where he did have a gun at one point during the chase at 3 in the morning. It was dark. I saw that. I watched both these videos. And in both cases, again, I'm not trying to say that these officers acted with malice, but I think they acted inappropriately. I mean, it's really easy for me to say. But when he stops the kid and tells him, turn around, and the kid turns around with his hands up and his hands have nothing in them, again, in the officer's defense, it was dark, it's 3 in the morning, and the kid was running.
Now,
and
He did have a gun at one point. He threw him, and the time between the kid throwing the gun and putting his hands up is, let's not exaggerate that was
a second?
Right. I mean, it's not like the kid threw the gun, ran 100 yards, stopped,
true.
Slowly put his hands up, and then the cop shot him. That's not what
all
happened,
very fast.
Right? I mean, the kid throws the gun, throws his hands up. Look, here's the deal. First of all, what this situation was likely was a gang initiation, right? The kid had been reported missing for 2 to 3 days. His family was looking for him. They couldn't find him. Kid pops up after the sensors in Chicago pick up gunfire. They find him, a 21-year-old. Okay. 21-year-old hands him a gun. Kid takes off running. Throws the gun, turns around, puts his hands up. It's dark. The cop shoots him. Now, look, I'm not saying that it's a justification for shooting him, but that's just the reality of what this situation likely was. I'm not faulting this officer, and I don't think that this officer should face charges. They should look into it. They should dig into it. But I can put this as justifiable based off of this, what we know.
Yeah, we called him a kid.
And what you've seen.
We called Duante Wright a kid. We called Adam Toledo a kid. He's 13 years old. He's a fucking child. I mean,
he is a child.
Now,
he's made terrible choices. Right. That put him in a really bad situation. Whether he actively chose to do this, whether he was recruited, whether he got, sucked into it, who knows? I don't know. But I spent enough time in this particular area dealing with this particular situation scenario enough to know that this very much feels like a Latin Kings gang initiation, right? Knowing I've done it. I've been there.
Yeah,
it wasn't law school. As a public defender, I dealt with this all the time, right? Like, I've seen this. I know exactly what this is, right? You can sit there, you don't know. Well, okay, I don't know for a fact, but I fucking know, right? I know what this is. So, does that change anything? Does that mean that the officer should have shot him? Just because of the situation doesn't necessarily mean the officer should have shot him. But based off of going back to what the procedure is, and given that split second that you have to figure it out, in the dark, someone we know has a gun, they do something, yeah, he threw it, but in the amount of time he throws it, the hands go up, did the gun actually leave his hand? Right? Did the gun leave his hand? Is he pointing it? What is happening right now? And you've got to figure out, if I don't shoot him, he could absolutely kill me. I don't know if that's the only weapon that he has. And he made the decision. It is very unfortunate. I feel terrible for the family. It's awful that this young man is dead at so young. And I feel terrible for the officer because he is not, right now, I can't imagine the anguish that he's going through. Right, but I feel that in this particular situation that his actions are justified unless I see something else beyond the video that I saw otherwise.
Would you say he can't be a street police officer anymore?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I stand by that. Yeah, I'm sorry. Right. You kill someone. You can do something else. You can work behind the desk. You can go into something else. I don't know. But you, I don't think you should be on the street.
Work as a training officer.
Right. I mean, you can. I mean, and you know, there's going to be cops who get all pissed off about it. I don't care. You know. I mean, I think that we at some point we need to start to look at these things. Like, just because it's the way it's always been doesn't mean it's the way it always should be. Right. And just because you're a cop and I haven't been doesn't mean that you're automatically right on this particular issue. And as a citizen, I think the standard should be you fucking kill one of the citizens and you probably shouldn't do this anymore. Right. I don't want to take a chance that you have some fucking weird streak in you where that's something that you want to do. So thank you for your service and you need to move on.
You know, one other thing that should be said about the officer that shot this kid is he immediately called for help
and tried CPR. To administer
CPR.
Yes.
He went and he was...
Which is what we... I mean, right? This is what we asked, right? With Tamir Rice, there's a chance that if they had administered CPR right away, maybe there's a chance that you save that kid. Right? They shot that kid in Tamir Rice right here in Cleveland, and then they fucking let him lay there. Someone tried to come administer CPR. His sister came. An FBI agent who just happened to be in the area, which is a whole other story, you know, came and he fought the police officers to administer CPR, although it was too late. That's what you want them to do. So look, I don't want to prop this police officer up and say that he did everything right and everything's fine and this is all going to go away. But just from looking at it, based off of what I know, based off the video that I saw, I think you're going to be hard pressed to say that he did something wrong, even though we don't like the result.
I agree with you 98.2%. The 1.8 is, I don't even know.
Exactly.
I
just knock him down a peg. Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
That's fine.
No,
that's
really, fine. That's not. You're a victim. There was a mass shooting in Indianapolis in a FedEx facility. I don't know enough about it yet.
Jim, so much death.
It's brutal, dude. It's fucking brutal. I mean,
it happens every day. You know,
well, that's part of the problem.
I'm saying death. I mean, like people die all the time all sorts of things, right? I mean, you know, heart disease, cancer, those sort of things kill tons of people every day. But
pandemic was killing 3,000 people a day.
It's so dark and heavy, and it weighs on my heart, right? Like, I mean, I could be a jerk and I could be rough around the edges and I could be mean, but I think
I 100% agree with you.
Right, I try to be empathetic. And this sort of thing, right? Like, it feels like it's draining you, right? And this situation was, you know, you had 8 people shot and killed. Gunman looks like he shot himself, was young. We don't know if he worked there. Seems like, you know, you've got a former disgruntled employee. We know that the family, the shooter's family, contacted police and said that he was acting erratically and making statements that he was going to hurt himself and others. But they didn't really have a mechanism to do much or anything about it. This happens, 8 people dead, he shoots himself. It's just tragic, right? Yeah. I mean, now people say, you know, well, this guns, gun violence, we got to get rid of the guns. Okay, look, I'm not gonna resist that we got to do something about guns. We got a ton of illegal guns that people get access to. We've got the wrong people getting their hands on guns, so we can have the gun control conversation or the gun safety or whatever you want to call it. But the underlying thing here is there's so many people at their breaking point right now. Sure. Look, we got everybody's weak, right? I mean, it's just all snowflakes and they're weak and fine. Okay, but either way, we got a lot of people that are just at their breaking point. Whether it's the pandemic, whether it's the economy, right? Like everyone says the economy's so great, but you still have hundreds of thousands, millions of people without jobs for an extended period of time. People that aren't even being calculated anymore who are out of jobs and, you know, or people who lose jobs that they're completely under pressure. Like they weren't making ends meet as it was. They lose their job and they're completely out of it. People who have mental health issues. And I completely understand that a person with mental health issues is more likely to be a victim than to become the aggressor. But, right, it happens where people with mental health issues break and they are the aggressor. It doesn't have to happen often, right? Like these mass shootings don't happen that often. It seems like they do because of the way that they're hyper, sensationalized. But the reality is, if you only have, you know, 5 of these a year, right? Like that's really not that many. The way it gets blown up.
But it's way more than that.
Exactly, it is way more. But the reality is, it's only a small. It's a drop in the bucket of people that are in this country. But you have a ton of people that are at a breaking point, right? And a small percentage of those people get to a point where they snap and they lose their shit and they do something like this. And my point is, yeah, you can take the guns away, okay, but you still have these people who are under this immense pressure that they still snap, right? And they shit still go south. And you're like, well, if we take the guns away, then they can't kill other people. Great. All right, so, but what are we doing about the fact that these people are snapping or breaking, right? Like, and that's the part, like, the rest of it, that's the part that I care about, is the human aspect, the actual human aspect of all of this.
Well, so, every time there's something that talks about guns in Indianapolis, I think about how easy it is to get a gun in Indianapolis. You remember me years ago showing you videos of Don's guns?
Yeah, no, I remember that. And that guy's notorious.
He is. He's one of the worst, you know, throw guns on the street dealers in the... Well, he's dead, but that shop was. Yes. But that's really not relevant to this. We need to do something about mental health. The problem is, one side says we need to get rid of guns. The other side says, no, it's all a mental health issue. Well, let's do something about something, because nothing has moved in either direction that I can think of. I don't like the idea of, someone calls the police and anonymously says, hey, Jim's acting erratically, and I know Jim's got guns. I'm nervous. I don't like the idea of that leading to law enforcement coming to my home and saying, someone reported you, we're taking your guns away. That's just a dangerous element to put out there. Having said that, when someone's family is calling and saying, we're worried about this, there has to be a mechanism. I'm not a social worker. I'm not a police officer. I don't know what that mechanism is, but something's got to be done. And what we can't have, and what we have had for 20 fucking years or more, is one side points mental health. One side points just get rid of the guns. Well, the guns are here. So you really can't get the toothpaste back in the tube. We've said that a bunch of times on the show.
Yep.
If you said, all right, we're just, you know, go full Australia plus even further, we're just, all citizens need to turn in all their firearms. One, you would have a mess on your hands and you would never deal with. But two, people aren't going to do that. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't fully comply with that. And the guns are there. So we can't get them to just magically disappear and say, let's, you know, when someone snaps, let it be a sucker punch in the break room versus 8 people dead. I don't know what the answer is. I just know we're not looking for it as a country, as a society, because
I think there are people who have dedicated their lives to figuring out the answer to these questions. We just need to listen to them, right? And I think there are people out there.
And apply what they've done.
Right, like who are saying, like, look, these are some of the mechanisms that we can use to help people that are under this level of mental duress and stress, right? Like, listen, everybody has mental health issues.
Sure.
Right? We all have brains. We all have emotions. We all have mental health issues, right? We all have good days and we all have bad days. Some people, it's directly related to their biology and chemical imbalances, right? Other people, it's just their inability to deal with the stress that they see day in and day out, or the trauma that they've experienced over the course of their life, or one particular specific trauma that they've experienced, right? And those all, there are different ways of dealing with all of those things, and there are people who have been studying it for centuries, decades, right? So we take that, and we have to start to apply it on a broader scale, and we have to work it into, you know, sort of our curriculum of how we operate, right? And it even to, the companies and the corporations that people work for, right? Taking that into account, like taking in the stress level of your workers. How about not demanding that people work 10, 12, 14-hour days, 5, 6, 7 days a week, and working in, like, look, everybody's taking a break. Right, we're going to shorten the workday, or we're going to shorten the work week. You got to take mandatory vacations, right? We need to get you in a situation where you can step away and unplug, and it's not looked down upon as you being a slacker, you not being dedicated. We got to get people to work, because we know, as much as we say that people are overworked, the people who have not had a job in years, or the people who can't rub together 2 nickels to make a dime, right? Those people are dying to work. So we got to figure out a way to get those people back in the workforce. And a lot of it is, fixing the issues that this war on drugs have created, right? A lot of the reasons why people are out of the workforce, because they can't pass a drug test, right? And why can't they pass a drug test? Because they smoke weed every day. Why do they smoke weed every day? Because of the stress of not having, we have these sick,
There's another drug aspect of this, that we have so many drugs out there that by design deprogram people. There's so many antidepressant drugs and other drugs that literally try to numb you to what you're feeling. Yeah. And I can't say this with any clinical data, but I can say by using my own fucking brain that I don't know if this shooter was on any of this stuff or whatever, but I know in the past they have been. If you are on something, whether it's recreational drug or a prescribed drug, that literally makes you not want to feel, doing things like this probably is much more likely. And again, that's just logic, not based on anything scientific. But
again, I think, starting to look at, how we interact with each other, what our expectations are of each other as employers, as, just co-citizens. Like, there have been people who have been looking at this for decades, right? Yeah. So now we need to start to take that stuff serious. I mean, because even if you take the guns off the street, okay, fine. All right, you've done it. You've taken the guns off. Everybody's slapping each other on the back and everybody's sucking each other's dick because we got rid of the guns. Congratulations, right? Timothy McVeigh showed us, you can take the guns. That shit don't matter. You ain't taking the fertilizer. You're right. Not taking away the U-Haul trucks, right? It's only a matter of time before somebody says, oh, well, Australia did it and they didn't have any problem. Australia doesn't have as many people. Australia doesn't have the same amount of diversity. Australia is just a smaller area, and Australia still has issues with violence,
sure.
Right? You're just not going to see it. It's not reported, right? It doesn't spread. It does the news that when it happens there, it doesn't get to here, but you talk to people who live in Australia, which I have, right? There's multiple people that I talk to that live there for different reasons, mostly powerlifting, but still, they have issues with violence. They have issues with drugs. They have issues with gangs, right? Like, we haven't had a mass shooting or whatever, right? But again, they have issues.
New Zealand did, by the way.
But I mean, what they don't talk about is, the issues with drugs and violence in their poor communities, right? Because they don't really want to advertise that to the rest of the world. They want people to come there and visit and everything else. But they have similar issues that every country has with poor people. Violence, a lot of times, and crime is directly related to access to resources. And people who don't have those access to resources lash out, right?
And there's not a lot of millionaires running around grabbing guns and shooting people up.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, it just, I think it's not an easy conversation, right? It's not an easy solution. It's complicated, and we have to start to dig in beyond the take guns away or just address mental health. Like, it's a multi-layered, deeply faceted problem that we have, and there's a lot of problems.
One thing that I would definitely do, and this is something the NRA has literally fought and lobbied to make illegal, is I would establish a CDC task force for this exact issue.
Yeah.
Because I do think the CDC is the right group.
We need a government. We need CDC, yes, maybe, I guess. I don't know. We need an official entity to track it objectively. Right. I mean, because we can't sit there. People want to point to, FBI statistics. That's my source. Okay. Well, look, what do we know about those FBI statistics? What we do know is that the police aren't required to report certain aspects of what happens, certain aspects of their data. They're not required to, and there's no check on how accurate it is, right?
And they're an enforcement agency.
Right. I mean, we don't have the checks and balances and systems in place to actually monitor this, to know what we're actually dealing with on a lot of different levels. And so, when it comes to gun violence, when it comes to police violence and things like that, we need to monitor and track it better. And right now, a lot of that is happening through journalism, and that needs to kind of be co-opted and refined, by the government. If we want the government to solve this problem, right, these problems, right, we have to give them the authority and the ability and the resources and the mechanisms to do it. But then there's the people
the political will.
Right, and the political will. But you also have the people who don't want the government to solve it. But, I mean, I would think there's an argument to say to those people, Well, you aren't fucking doing anything either. So, like, well, sorry.
This is a government thing because this affects society as a whole. This is not something where you can say...
It's a social health thing.
This is not something where you can say, we need a private enterprise to step in and do the right thing here. No. Mm. No.
Not a chance.
There is none. All government isn't bad. I know certain people are going to tell me to fuck off over that, but I'm actually kind of a government... I believe that government does a lot of good and should do better. There's plenty of incompetence. There's plenty of things that they fuck up. But I do believe that they have a value in society. And that's why...
Agreed. You're right. You're not wrong about that. I mean, people will sit there and attack the government and talk about how great private industry is when they work for shitty private companies that are inefficient and barely keeping their head above water.
Right.
Right?
Companies pay my bills, so thank you for sucking at your jobs.
Right. I mean, there's just... I mean, whether they're big, small, whatever, you know, I mean, you got to love the small business guy who, you know what I mean, who's... fucking running massive debt and, you know, got bill collectors all over him. So, private industry is the way to go and small business is the backbone of this country. It's like, no, you are you're draining. You know, I mean, it's crazy. But anyway.
Right, yes. Moving on. So we've imparted sanctions on Russia. I don't know the details of them, but I do know that all the people saying that Putin is walking all over Joe Biden, I'd like to hear your response about this.
Well, I mean, look, what this is... Biden's administration, they really dug into Russia's interactions with the U.S., hacking, voting, just everything, right? And then, you know, Trump's administration didn't dig into it nearly as deep.
That would be a fair statement.
Right, I mean, for obvious reasons, right? So Biden gets in there and they says, look, you know... And Biden's administration, to be fair, like they're not saying, look, Trump was colluding. Trump did something wrong. What they're saying was he was infiltrated, right? Now, if you want to say, all right, he should have known better, fine, whatever. I don't know what you're basing that off of. They picked him and his team for a reason, right? Because they were incompetent, because they weren't prepared for it, because they knew that they were predictable and you could slip a fastball by them. And they did. They slipped multiple by them. And any interaction that took place wasn't necessarily intentional. Now, Paul Manafort, Roger Stone, their whole situation is a little bit different. Mike Flynn, you can make an argument that those guys were... I can make the argument that those guys and their involvement was more malicious. I'm not... As much as I'm not a Trump fan, I think that's clear and obvious based off of the last 5 years on this show. But what I will say is that the culpability on this comes down to Russia and what they did and how they infiltrated us and their direct assault on our democracy, and that's the focus. Look, did they use Trump, right, as a way to do it? Yes. Sure. Did they do it to his knowledge? I don't think so. I can't say the same for Roger Stone. I can't say the same for Paul Manafort. I think that they're dirty for sure. Beyond what they were convicted of, but I don't have the proof. I can just think that. I can't say it as a for sure thing. But what these Russians, what these sanctions on Russia, what they do though, is they're specifically on any money that Russia tries to raise through debt and through bonds and things like that, right? Like, so that money is now sanctioned. So their ability to basically go out and buy and sell money is directly impacted by U.S. sanctions. Now, what they're going to say is, oh, well, you can go on the secondary market and then you can use an intermediary, right, to basically buy our money. So this isn't going to hurt us, right? But listen, the U.S. government isn't stupid. We could expand these sanctions to the secondary market and also other countries and other entities that are looking for money and debt. They don't want to tangle with this. They don't want to get involved with how difficult it is to try to get money once you have something like this hovering over your head. So they're going to go elsewhere. And this directly hurts their ability to raise money and raise capital for whatever it is that they want to do. So at some point in time, they're going to have to sit down with the United States, call the dogs off in terms of all the infiltration that you're trying to do if they want to get this off the table, right? I mean, because this, like, you're not going to see how bad this hurts Russia, but this is a devastating blow to them. They're never going to admit it, but I am more than I'm not sure if this is Market Ben's arena, but we could find someone whose arena it is, and I'm willing to bet that they would agree with me that this is a pretty devastating blow for Russia, for Russia and their ability to raise capital, which they need right now.
Right, and I want to commend the Biden administration for getting tough, because I do think for whatever reason, Trump was easy to manipulate, easy to predict, and all the people saying that, you know, Putin doesn't respect Biden. Well, I tell you, Putin respects money. And, all right, so real quick, totally changing gears. Aaron Donald was accused of beating up a guy outside a nightclub in Pittsburgh, and the guy's face looked like he got hit by Aaron Donald. I mean, that guy's face was jacked up. Video has emerged showing that Aaron Donald probably was helping break up the fight before his buddy said, let's get the fuck out of here. And that and in this world, video is everywhere. So the guy, the accusation gets made, Aaron Donald gets dragged. I initially was treating it like a Mike Tyson, Mitch Green situation. And, you know, I wasn't convicting Aaron Donald, but I was under the assumption that there was validity to this. Once you saw the video, no, not really. And the problem with being the rich guy in the nightclub at 2 in the morning is...
You got the deep pockets.
Yep.
You got the deep pockets.
And in the accuser's defense, he may well think it was Aaron Donald, right? He's getting the shit kicked out of him. He sees Aaron Donald's head or saw him in the club earlier. He's like, yeah, I know that my right eye doesn't work right now. And
yeah. You sent it to me, maybe?
I did.
You sent it to me. I saw it. You had made the Mitch Green reference. I was more intrigued by that because I just remember that from the kid, Mike Tyson beating the guy up outside a movie theater or whatever.
No, it was outside of a clothing store.
Oh, yeah, clothing store. That's right. I was a kid when that happened.
I was in college.
But when I saw it, I was just like, okay, well, we'll see where this is. I didn't think much of it. I thought it was probably bullshit that would blow over. I don't know Aaron Donald from anybody else other than I just know him from the NFL, right? I've seen him play, and I watched him when the Rams were on Hard Knocks. But it felt kind of out of character because you never heard anything about him being, you know, aggressive. But that doesn't mean anything. But just being a college athlete and knowing how these situations go down, right? Like, as a college athlete, like, listen, and it's not like I was playing in the SEC or a Power 5 school. I played at the University of Massachusetts. At the time, we were 1AA. We played in the Atlantic 10. UMass, not a big football school, but we had a good time playing. And we had to deal with, go push those guys around the football team. Hopefully they get in a fight. Everywhere.
I mean, that's a WVU and Ohio State.
Right?
I saw that.
Like, I mean, it is everywhere. It's at fucking Division III schools, right? Like, so part of that, like, I'm partial. I'm just biased, right? Because having been, like, there's not many places where I walk in where I'm not the biggest, strongest guy when I walk in. So I have to deal with this type of shit all the time, right? Now, I didn't think anything of it. I kind of had forgotten about it, and then I got the Bleacher Report thing that there's a video, and when you go through and you watch what happened and you read it out, it's just like, we have another one of these, right? Like, maybe the guy made a mistake. Maybe the guy was just trying to get to the deepest pockets that he could, but I think Aaron Donald walks away from this pretty relatively unscathed, right, with, you know, somebody saying, well, you know, stay out of the clubs because nothing good happens after midnight, which he will say, fuck all the way off and, you know, go on with his merry way.
You know, I know a story. This is from a friend, so I was not personally there, but there's a former Ohio State quarterback who's being taunted by a guy on a bike just off campus at Ohio State, and the guy was literally circling this quarterback on his bike, just talking shit. And finally, the guy literally knocks the guy over, picks up his bike, and like throws it over a fence and says, fuck off. And I'm not going to name the quarterback, but it's someone that is a well-known name. And I believe that happened. And I find it absolutely hilarious. You fuck with someone enough and you get your bike, get knocked off your bike and have it thrown over a fence. You fucking deserve it.
Bobby Hoying?
No.
Okay.
No. Should I say it?
Yeah.
Kirk Herbstreit.
Okay, that was my next guess. Because Kirk Herbstreit has taken a lot of heat in Columbus, man. But this is what he was a player. Well,
he took a lot of heat then too.
Well, he took a lot of heat then too because he wasn't very good. But
I mean, he was good.
He was good, but he wasn't great. And,
right.
You know.
Right.
I mean,
anyway, my friend Tom from when I worked in Columbus told me that story, and somehow like a thing of nachos gets knocked over. Anyway, on that note, let's shut this
down. Kirk Herbstreit is a big guy.
He is a big guy. I've met him multiple times.
Right, he's a big dude.
Like, do you know the story when I'm getting drunk and trying to like tell him to come visit me in Boston?
Gross.
That never happened. No. Good. That's not exactly what happened. I'll whatever.
You can regale me later.
Yeah, exactly. We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. Thank you for listening. We're done.